The Athletic.
Oh, no. No, no.
Is it like Bulls, but just with an egg?
Yeah,
yeah, but it's not, because he's Crown Green egg bowling, so it's
But with also an extra 500% insanity as well. That's what you're missing from
it. It was so good that was at the end of the podcast, because if that had happened at the start of that podcast,
it would have ruined.
Yeah. Can you imagine how angry I'd have been for that entire podcast?
And quite rightly so as well.
Well, rightly so, yeah. Right, come on.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I've got Chris Woff here with me this morning, also George Coggan and somebody else as well. Jacob Whitehead has joined us to gloat, I think. Well, can you gloat, Jacob, when it's a draw? I don't think you can you?
I'm not gloating, I'm quite dispirited. I see it as 2 points lost, to be honest, after the mauling at Goodison earlier this season, and given that Everton had the match's outstanding player in Jordan Pickford.
I knew this was a mistake.
Get rid of him. It was a mistake. We've organised to get Jacob on, very much anticipating a comfortable home victory, and this is not what any of us wanted. Well,
the George jinxed, as we're going to come on to.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I jinxed, but I did jump the gun slightly, yeah, you're right.
But it's always lovely to see you, Jacob, dear boy. Thanks for coming back on. Chris Woff, how are you this morning? Are you all right?
I'm all right, I suppose. I'm middling, like Newcastle United after last night. I'm limping on. I'm down to my barest bones.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, Newcastle United were through Barebone and down to Marrow, weren't they, yesterday? I mean, it was a very, very weak bench, a makeshift team kind of cobbled together, George.
I'm just thinking about Chris's bare bone now, and I'm struggling. Sorry, I'm struggling.
It's too early in the morning for that, George. It really is.
It is, yeah.
Alexander Isak, Chris, strikes again. 5 in a row for the sensational Swede.
Yes, 19 for the season in all competitions, 15 in the Premier League. He obviously got the 2 penalties of the weekend against West Ham. It was a really, really good goal in Newcastle's opener. A couple of headers, one in midfield, and then Harvey Barnes sort of lifts the ball over James Tarkowski with a lovely sort of like flicked pass down the left-hand side, and then Isak cuts inside Jared Branthwaite, and he's almost falling when he puts it in the net, but still has the composure to put it in. But he did miss a couple of other opportunities, but I think that's harsh to detract from his performance. I think that he really is the reason why Newcastle are still in with a shout of hopefully getting into European football, because I think he is top class. He still has a huge amount of growth potential, but you can play him anywhere across the front line. He can come deep, and I just think he's such a handful at the moment. Yeah, it was a really, really good goal.
Jared Branthwaite has the highest dual success rate of any centre-back in the top 5 leagues, under 23, and Alex Isak really did make him look pretty silly with just that little drop of a shoulder to put him down. I mean, obviously a player who's called up by England this week, and I think Isak just really exposed some of the levels which there are in the Premier League and at the elite end of football. It really was a gorgeous finish, and he always does it against Everton. I'm thinking back to last year and beating 5 players. It's just not fair.
He loves playing against Everton. One of the words that Eddie Howe used about him afterwards was electric, and you know, that was a kind of good phrase. He just looks confident. He looks like he's going to score. I don't quite agree with Chris about the miss. I think it was a bad miss and late on in the game, and it's very critical. But I do think that that is the one area of his game that he still has to improve. I think, you know, has this incredible scoring rate in the Premier League this season, but he remains a scorer of great goals as opposed to a great goal scorer. And I think that is part of the game. That
got 19
part of the
goals
game
this season. No Newcastle player has scored. No, as I said, season since Alan Shearer. I just don't agree.
Well, that's fine. I mean, as I say, I think, you know, one of the things that Howe said as well afterwards was that he'll be thinking about that miss as opposed to the goal. And I hope he is thinking about that miss, because I think it's something that he can still improve at. There aren't enough tap-ins. There aren't enough scruffy goals. He's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful footballer. And my goodness, Newcastle have needed him this season. I'm incredibly excited when I watch him play. He's fabulous. As said, it's very, very critical, but I think that miss was a big moment in the match.
But his goal was a fabulous finish, wasn't it? We have to give a lot of praise to Harvey Barnes as well in that situation. He was another big plus last night. Terrific assist. His energy did ebb a little bit later on, but his decision-making was excellent throughout, Chris, wasn't it?
It was, and it was a big night for him because obviously he came on and was dramatically changed the game against West Ham with his two goals. But actually, when he started Premier League matches for Newcastle, for various reasons, primarily due to injury and fitness, and he hasn't performed, and he didn't perform when he came on at Blackburn Rovers in the FA Cup a few weeks ago. And but last night he started really well, and I thought first half he caused all sorts of problems down that side. Godfrey did not have a very good evening, I didn't think, for Everton. He was very much overloaded on that side, and I actually think Newcastle didn't use Barnes or Anderson enough. There were various times where you could see Elliot Anderson, he was actually communicating with Lewis Hall and telling Lewis Hall to step into midfield almost as an inverted fullback. And then that's because Anderson wanted to go wide, and he was in acres of space, and Newcastle didn't find them often enough. Certainly in that first half, I thought, as good as Newcastle were, I thought they could have actually used that left-hand side a little bit more, because I did think that's where the danger came from.
There was a bit of an unusual sensation in that first half, George, wasn't there? There was a bit of comfort, and I thought Newcastle looked pretty solid. I tweeted at half-time and said, if Newcastle go up a gear here or change gear, we could blow Everton away. And we did change gear, but it was reverse, unfortunately. Well, but it was a strange feeling in that first half. It didn't seem like anything was going to go wrong.
Yeah, I made the mistake of saying exactly the same sort of thing. But I mean, I did give myself the caveat that if this goes wrong, then chances are it will, and it did. but I thought that was the first time for a while that we've seen Newcastle have control of a match. If you then compare it to what happened at the weekend, you know, that West Ham game, it was kind of chaotic. You just couldn't sort of predict which way it was going to go. This was much more sort of dominant. Everton were poor, I thought, and Newcastle were, there were shades of that old Newcastle. When I say old, I mean last season. It's not like ancient history, but that they had some measure of control. I think what happened after that was a pretty familiar story. They ran out of gas. There wasn't enough on the bench to push them forward. Everton did grow into the game. They grew in confidence and got better, obviously helped by Dominic Calvert-Lewin coming on. Eddie Howe certainly took positives from that first half performance.
Yeah, really disappointed about the late goal, but quite positive over our last two performances. Thought today was an improvement again defensively as well. I think that's worth noting how difficult Everton are to play against. I think bar the penalty, and I think they've hit the post. Apart from that, I think we've kept them relatively quiet. And they ask a lot of questions. They put a lot of balls in the box. They chuck the ball down your throat with Pickford's long kicks. But we stood up to that challenge with a young team excellently. So I think there's a lot of positives to take from today.
We'll have to see what they take into Fulham. But it was a strange feeling. Not a lasting one.
Just on the flip side, and George alluded to it briefly there, this was also a case of Everton going and changing the game. Like, Dyche made a triple substitution around an hour, I think, as well as Calvert-Lewin. James Garner made a really big difference in midfield, and particularly when a few legs in Newcastle's midfield started to get a little bit tired. And it's very weird that Everton had a stronger bench than Newcastle, given relative position. But obviously, with Newcastle's injuries, Howe didn't have the counterpunch to Dyche's changes. And I don't know how you felt about it. I kind of felt like Everton were the more likely winners after the equaliser.
I'd agree with that. I think you mentioned the energy. I also think it was control in midfield. I actually thought Garner and Gomez both came on and they controlled the ball, and Newcastle weren't good enough on the ball in the second half. For as good as they were in the first half, I know they had a couple of big opportunities in the second half, Newcastle, the Isak one that George mentions, and also obviously the goal that's rightly disallowed because Isak was offside for Byrne. I didn't think that Newcastle really looked like winning it for most of the second half, or going and getting the second goal for a large part of the second half. I didn't feel like it was the balls being sucked towards the Gallagher end or any of those sorts of cliches to me. And the more the game wore on, the more confidence Everton had, and it just seemed to be a bit of nerves. And the long balls over the top, which had caused a few problems in the first half, even if Everton hadn't been able to do anything with them, the more that drew on, and the more once Calvert-Lewin came on, there was actually someone for them to hit a bit more with them. And then when they win the second ball, someone who's composed on the ball as they had in midfield, I thought that, as the game wore on, unfortunately, I thought that Everton were the better side.
Yeah, it felt like the longer the game lasted, the more likely it was that Everton were going to score an equaliser and then potentially a winner as well. And of course, it didn't help that we failed to put away our chances. Having said that, did we really miss them? Or, I mean, John Pickford was superb in goal, wasn't he, George?
Yeah, no, Pickford was tremendous. Absolutely needs to be said. Always gets stick at these games, always gets pumped up for these games, but he was absolutely sensational. He looked like an England goalkeeper. I thought he was brilliant. One thing just to mention in passing before others chip in, I quite enjoyed watching Everton play. It's so rare to see a team... Chris pulling faces at me. It's so rare to see a team come to St James's and play any other way these days. Everybody plays out from the back. I quite enjoyed watching a team pose a different sort of challenge. And those long balls out from Pickford, the balls into the box, look, Newcastle were having to head away. You know, I actually quite enjoyed seeing that style of football and Newcastle being in...
See the weird team who haven't won in 13 games play. Yeah, that was great, yeah.
I don't mean that. I just mean my sentence just tailed off there, like Newcastle's performance last night. But I enjoyed watching a team with a different style of play. I'm not saying that they played brilliantly, but I think that physical challenge was quite interesting to watch, something a bit different for a change.
Both George and Sean Dyche have uttered the words, you can stick your double pivot up your ass in the last month.
I thought the lads were absolutely fantastic last night. I thought they put a real shift in.
Your dream manager voice.
Yeah, it was fairly agricultural though, wasn't it, Jacob? At times there was a lot of hoof, shall we say. Are we going to call them long passes, or are we going to call them hoofs?
It depends who's playing it, doesn't it? If Fabian Scher's playing it, you call it a raking long ball. If it's John Pickford booting it out towards Dominic Calvert-Lewin, it's a hump.
If it's a diagonal, it's a pass. If it's a straight line, it's a long ball.
Does no one agree with me there, though, that too much of the Premier League is absolutely identikit in terms of... I mean, I know, you know, Newcastle, at their best, they press and they're aggressive in their front foot and seem to can play counter-attack, but sort of everybody passes it out from the back now. Does nobody agree with what I'm saying there?
I know where you're coming from, and I think I'm remembering right that Pochettino made a similar point, possibly to you, George, earlier in the season.
Well, that's clearly where I've got it from, because I don't have a thought.
I just thought it was innate,
yeah.
Just innate tactical. But Everton, at their best, to be fair, do have this quite nice vertical style of play where they get it forward quickly, but not in a hoofy way, but just sort of like quick vertical upfield passes, which is quite nice. But Chris is looking very sceptical.
No, I've got no issue with seeing different styles of play if a team's actually decent at it, but I didn't think Everton were particularly... I think that with a team haven't won in 13 games, I mean, as much as they looked like they should have possibly... Maybe even could have won it in the end last night, they're a team who haven't won in 13 games. So I can't say I enjoyed watching them lumber through 60-65 minutes before they actually got into the game, no?
Well,
now, I suppose although last game, in the reverse fixture, they had a 30-pass flowing move for the third goal. So, I mean, they're a team who are capable of both.
I know we were going to talk about Dan Burn a bit later, but it's worth... I think maybe it's worth mentioning him now. Taylor, you made the point very well on X last night after the game about how good he was at centre-half. I enjoyed watching Dan Burn play at centre-half.
Me too.
Having this physical duel, having, you know, making these incredible aerial challenges. I thought he was absolutely superb, and I did enjoy that.
Did he look like he really enjoyed it as well, George? I thought he looked like he was in his element doing that.
Yeah.
He said he did. If you watch his NUFC TV interview, and he said as much as I've enjoyed playing at left back, my natural position, as he said before, is centre-half. And he said that I enjoyed that sort of balance, that game suited me. Not as much running as you do at left-back, but you've got to be concentrated the whole match. You've got to win those aerial duels. You've got to know where your man is. And yeah, I think he did relish all of it.
If you get to stand close at a Fabian Scher, then it's always a bonus, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's always a plus point.
I thought both centre-halves did well. Obviously, what happened at the end of the game happened, but I thought they stood up to that challenge very well. And that's what I'm saying. It's not something I'm like holding close to my heart, because the end of the game was incredibly disappointing. But actually seeing a different style of play, Newcastle equipped themselves well, I thought at the back, it was decent. And in a defence which had to be cobbled together.
I'd eat orchid.
So we mentioned earlier on that it's a pretty paper-thin squad at the minute, Chris. Newcastle without a full 11 of first-team players at the minute.
Yeah, but when people say a full 11, that could just be, oh, you know, 11 good players. Newcastle, if you actually put the team in a 4-3-3 formation, yeah, it's actually a very strong team. You could have Pope, Trippier or Livramento right back, Botman, Lascelles, Livramento or Target at left back, or Trippier, I suppose, at left back, Joe Linton, Tonali, Miley in the midfield, then Almiron, Wilson and Gordon up front. Now, obviously, Tonali and Gordon were suspended. Tonali remains suspended. Gordon will be back this weekend, but that just shows
not a bad
sort of
team, that, is it?
Issues Newcastle have. If you start, if that started in
Premier League, stronger now.
Well, exactly. Yeah, if that started in a Premier League match early in the season when Newcastle were dovetailing between Champions League and Premier League, I don't think many people would have batted an eyelid, because that's how strong it is. But that's the situation Newcastle are in, and you just looked at the bench and it was back to the sort of depths of November and December bench wise last night. And that's not to denigrate anyone who was on there, but you had three under 21s in there called up who all played at some point in what you had. Yeah. Ben Parkinson came on at Bournemouth when Newcastle had very few options there. Then you also had Amadou Diallo and Alex Murphy came on and made the debuts against Chelsea. You had Matt Ritchie on the bench who wasn't used last night. You had two goalkeepers again. It was Newcastle were very, very threadbare, and that was very much the issue as the tools of this season and the fact that they've played twice inside 4 days started to tell during the second half, and Jacob mentioned that Everton subs came on and changed the game, and they did, and they had that energy and Newcastle clearly didn't. Anderson was taken off, and I know a lot of people weren't particularly happy about that, but equally he needs to be protected still, because he is still come back from this back injury. He can't play a full 90 minutes. Barnes really shouldn't have played the entire game last night in an ideal world, because he's still coming back. This is the Newcastle are very, very, very stretched. And the game has fundamentally changed in the Premier League since they've had five substitutions, and teams who can't make them, if you're not comfortably winning, then you are very much at risk of being outrun, because teams just have more energy when they bring them on.
The other side of that coin is that you then look at the people who did play. Chris mentioned Anderson. That was his first start since October.
Yeah.
Barnes was making his fourth start of the season. Emil Kraft starting his first league match since May 2022. Lewis Hall, it was only his second league start for the club. Yes, a lot of those players have been in and around the squad, but there was a huge difference between coming on for a couple of minutes and starting a match in the Premier League. And that's the other bit where those injuries kick in. Of course, the biggest thing in terms of the way the match went concerns Paul Dummett. We'll talk about him more in a minute. But he has played precisely 4 minutes in 2 years of Premier League football. And he's being asked to kind of come on and immediately be up to speed in a match. And that's very difficult. Again, the flip side of that coin is then, why is he there in the first place? Why is he on the bench? That's a different question. That's a very different question, and one it is important to answer. But you're talking about a squad that's stretched to its absolute limit and a team that wasn't used to each other and wasn't used to playing full stop.
All those statistics are very interesting, George. I mean, I assume they all came from you trawling through the internet yesterday and making sure that you had all that information ready for the match last night. Was that correct? Is that where that information came from?
I've got a sort of stat monkey who occasionally sits next to me at matches and who I feed on peanuts.
Stat monkey.
turned up last night, right? And I do this stat document before every game, stats and sort of information before the match.
Oh,
and he turns up. And because there weren't as many stats necessarily readily available going into the game, he sat there beforehand. He's like, I looked at that document. It's basically, you've given up, haven't you, Chris? This is a waste of time. And then I spent the next hour, once the team was announced, going through all of these statistics for George to then use in his piece. So, yeah, and no worries.
Yeah, because I'd shamed you. Yeah. Prepare to fail, fail to prepare. No, hang on. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail. And I thought, you know, a crucial stage of the season, I think you'd lost your intensity. You'd lost your identity. I wanted more from you. I gave you a mild bollocking pre-match. You delivered. And I made use of your research and took all the credit for it. Although looking at the comments on my match piece, credit is possibly the wrong word.
Very much playing the Matt Ritchie role during this exchange, George, weren't you?
That's right.
Just kick him up the arse, right, make sure he's doing his job properly. Yeah. Well, there's something we've got to address, isn't there? Paul Dummett, he made a mistake, a bad, costly mistake. He was on the field because one of our left backs is injured and another one is covering in at centre-half, and the third had to come off after 70 minutes in a bruising match when short on fitness. He deserves a bit of sympathy, Jacob, doesn't he? Not a bollocking or a barragan.
I have some sympathy for him. At the same time, it doesn't matter if he's playing left back or centre back to know not to put someone in a headlock in the box. Yeah. And like when he's in there to a large amount for his experience, I think you don't give him a bollocking because yes, he is maybe short of match experience, but he's not short of career experience. And I think that's the mistake which falls into the second. Like, don't go too harsh because it's a mistake. It's one he'll regret. But I don't have too much mitigation, I think, in terms of why it actually happened.
Yeah.
Paul Dummer should know, George, shouldn't he, that you can't drag players to the ground by their head in the penalty area and expect to get away with it.
No, I mean it was a bad challenge. It was a clear penalty from what I saw. He's got his arms all around him and he drags him down. And my response as a human being is to say, of course, he deserves sympathy. And as a supporter, as a football supporter, I would say the same thing. You know, like, my job is to support him, you know, he should get support. But at the same time, it was terrible. It was a terrible challenge. It did cost Newcastle. I think that thing of being ready to come on, which I mentioned before, in the Premier League, to be immediately up to speed is very difficult. But he's an experienced player. We haven't seen a lot of him over the last kind of couple of years. And so he's become this sort of strange figure, someone who's around the squad, who's often on the bench but never plays. And, you know, before then, I thought he's been a really good player for Newcastle during difficult times. He's been at the club, you know, all his career, obviously. But he should sort of know better than that. And it returns us to the question. I think something that gets asked a lot is that if he's not good enough to come on, if he's not good enough to play, why is he in the squad? Now, there is one obvious answer to that, which we've talked about a lot, and that's because Newcastle have not been able to do everything all at once. So he gets given a new contract because he's a familiar presence. He knows the club, you know, that horrible cliche, good in the dressing room, and can do a job. It's the doing a job bit that we have a problem with, I think, because he just doesn't play. So it does sort of, it raises that question again. He will be supported by Howe. He'll be supported by his teammates because that's what the club's like. That's what the team's like. But it does sort of raise that sort of uncomfortable question of why he's around in the first place.
I suppose he did have an excellent game. He's only played 4 minutes in the Premier League, but he did deservedly get plaudits after his performance against City in the Carabao Cup. So yep, Clearly this is still a player who can perform at a very high level. I mean, it's against like Manchester City, for Christ's sake.
That was a long time ago, though.
About 6 months ago.
Well, yeah. And it was a long time ago in this season. And I mean,
I suppose, you know, the wheels can fall off quickly when you start getting into your late 30s.
That's a dig.
I definitely can't remember that. So, wheels.
I think we'll try and finish this. We'll try and finish this section on a positive, Chris. Why don't we? Elliot Anderson, I thought, we've mentioned him already briefly, but I thought he had a really, really good game, especially that first half. He looked strong, he looked determined, he looked fit. Obviously, he's not quite ready to play a full game yet, but the shades of a really good player there, isn't there? And Eddie Howe obviously fancies him as well.
Yeah, I mean, Howe said after the weekend that Anderson, during pre-season, he thought was arguably Newcastle's best player during pre-season. And at that stage, he thought this was going to be what he really described as his real breakthrough season for the first team. And obviously, due to injuries, that hasn't, unfortunately, quite happened for him. But I thought that actually the four players who came into the starting 11, all of them brought something. I mean, Emil Kraft is not Tino Livramento or Kieran Trippier, but I actually thought for decent parts of the game, he did relatively well, given his lack of football. So he was actually trying to get forward, certainly first half, and did put a couple of decent balls into the box and get into decent positions. Lewis Hall, as I was saying, on the ball, I thought he looked nervy at points during the first half, but on the ball, you can see the technical quality he has and that ability to step into midfield and almost that inverted role and the sort of engine he has to get up and down. And then Harvey Barnes, we've already mentioned. And then, yes, Elliot Anderson. I just think he's different to the midfielders in Newcastle have. He's always looking forward. He is always looking to either carry the ball or to send someone in behind with a few passes. And he does give the ball away, but that's because he's always looking for that sort of progressive pass. And sometimes that means he concedes possession, but also it means that he breaks lines and he gets Newcastle into strong areas. And he also, there were points where he was just charging around the pitch, pressing with such intensity, moving from one player to another, trying to win the ball back. he brings a bit an energy. And yes, he did fade, but I think between now and the end of the season, if Newcastle can keep him fit, then hopefully we will see the very best of him, because his cameos in the last couple of weeks have been very, very good.
They have indeed. Right then, let's move on, chaps. We'll have a quick break and we'll be back in a bit to talk about Fulham.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, chaps, before we get into the Fulham chat, the lasses, they aren't playing this weekend, but we got a request in from the War Flags lot as they anticipate more ambitious displays at the women's game, starting with what should be a title-winning celebration, careful, George, against Huddersfield at Kingston Park on April the 14th. We'll put a link in the show notes, but it's out there on social media already, so please do give generously. Go to warflags.org.uk/NUFC women.
Yeah, I mean, obviously War Flags, you know, famously fill out St James's Park, brilliant, absolutely brilliant, the atmosphere, great displays, and have really done so much for the men's team. They are there every match for the women's game too at Kingston Park. It's brilliant. There's been some brilliant flags. They've got loads of volunteers who are there, and they really help make it a brilliant atmosphere. Graham, friend of the podcast, he's often there, and yeah, these lads and lasses, they give up their own time to do that. So anything we can do to support would be greatly appreciated. I know.
So then, chaps, Newcastle go to Craven Cottage on Saturday, 3 p.m. kickoff against Fulham. And the news filtering through is that Miggy Almiron and Tino Livramento, respectively, will both be out for around about a month. And Kieran Trippier looks likely to miss this one as well, Chris. Not great news.
No, I mean, the Trippier news is slightly bizarre because for a while Howe had basically suggested that West Ham, Everton, those sorts of two matches were when they hoped that Kieran Trippier would be round about being available. But Howe says he definitely won't play against Fulham. Some of the suggestions from others at the club is that it could be up to another 3 weeks, and that sort of Palace in midweek towards the middle end of April is more likely to see him. And by that stage, it would be like nearly 7 weeks that he's been out for what has been described as a minor injury. So that's not good at all, particularly not when the club tweeted out before the game on Saturday a picture of him arriving as if he was going to be involved. And George also saw him afterwards and basically said, yeah, he looks fine, doesn't he? Yeah, he looked really good, didn't he, George?
I declared him fit, yeah. I said he walked jauntily out of the stadium.
on the first look.
Yeah, but yeah, he was jaunty in the way he walked out. Yeah, he'll be fine. I mean, I'm so used to seeing like Fabian Scher and everybody else just limp out of the stadium when they're there. So I thought he looked good. But yeah, just to reiterate what Chris said, I'm not a doctor. So yeah,
are you not? Are you not?
But no.
But in terms of Almiron and Livramento, that's a blow. I mean, it's in some ways it's, I suppose, hopefully, if those timescales prove to be correct, which has not been the case all the way through the season, then that is a relief in some ways, because Almiron, with it being his knee, you did fear it could be long-term, really, given what happened to Lascelles and Botman. But they're not going to be available this weekend. Newcastle are going to be really, really stretched, both in defence and attack going forward, and that's just going to pile even greater pressure, both in terms of to play, but also physical load on those players who are in that starting 11 at the minute.
Let's have a little dip into conspiracy corner as well here, Jacob. Joe Willock was selected on the bench against Everton. It might suggest that he's maybe not 100% yet.
I think given Joe Willock's injury history over the last 18 months, and given the amount of attention there's been on Newcastle's injury record overall, I think this is a case of actually Howe being careful and making sure don't give him tons of minutes. Like, there's clamour for Elliot Anson to start. Sean Longstaff has the ability to play. I know that he's been dealing with stuff, but he's able to. And so just protect Joe Willock a little bit. There's another month or so. It's almost most important for Newcastle that Willock is fully firing, almost use this season as a tune into next season, where he can really explode into it and be the player who was a star in 2022-23.
I mean, we should remember that Willock's started five matches since right at the end of February. There were sort of rumours pre-match that he might not be involved, and so we were a bit concerned about that. But he came on, and I think Jacob's exactly right. I mean, if the big issue this season has been injuries and the number of them, his load has to be managed, and I think that's important. It's not a luxury that that Newcastle have had, but it is important, if they can do it, that they should. And I guess that was one position where they did at least have one alternative, and Anderson played well.
He certainly did. And it'll be great to have Anthony Gordon back as well after his one-match suspension. Jacob, you've not had much chance to comment on Anthony Gordon for a while, have you, given you became our kind of Anthony Gordon correspondent in recent months?
Yeah, well, it's nice to see him play well for England against Brazil a couple of weeks ago. But I was quite pleased not to see him last night because against Everton's ancient fullbacks, the thought of Anthony Gordon sort of drifting inside and whacking it towards the top corner was not one I particularly wanted to deal with, because if you think that sort of Jordan Pickford is going to kick stuff off between different sets of fans, I think Anthony Gordon, given the circumstance of his departure, might be an even more inflammatory character.
Newcastle, Chris, have only lost one Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff under Eddie Howe. Come on then, name that tune.
This is the Whitehead curse at Kenilworth Road, I believe. They curse both the men and the women there, haven't you, Jacob?
I have, actually. Yeah, that's a fair point.
No more games for you.
I quite like it. It's a 20-minute train away from my mum and dad's. I'll do all of them.
Newcastle usually pretty decent on a 3 p.m. kickoff, Chris.
They are, yeah. I mean, they haven't had as many of them this season, given being newer. But actually, the last couple of seasons, because they just get selected for TV so much. But their record has been very good under Eddie Howe at 3 p.m. And hopefully, I mean, they go to Fulham, who they beat away in the FA Cup in January in what was an absolutely awful game. Was it January? Was it January or February? It was a terrible game anyway. Newcastle got through in the end, but first half was really, really poor.
Turgid stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But Fulham have a pretty good home record. I mean, they've not been great in the last couple of weeks. They've had mixed form the last couple of weeks, but they are good at home. And so this will be a challenge for Newcastle.
Speaking of kickoff times as well, I forgot about mentioning this. We never play Everton at any other time apart from on a night.
Midweek, yeah, because that's because the Premier League think that Merseyside and Tyneside, they're in the north, so they must be right next to each other, yeah.
When was the last time we played Everton on a Saturday or a Sunday? I can't remember.
Yeah.
A long, long time ago. Anyway, Fulham were crap at Forest. I think that is the analytical way of putting it. And they were crap the last time we played them as well. George, you would hope that Newcastle had enough to beat them.
Well... Would you? I mean, you just don't know. You don't know what Newcastle are going to turn up. You don't know which Fulham are going to turn up.
Very true.
You know, they rival Newcastle in terms of ridiculous results. Certainly in the past few weeks, they stuffed Tottenham. They drew 3-3 with Sheffield United, and then they lost 3-1 to Forest. So it's a kind of a really bizarre run of form. And then you look at Newcastle's run of form. They've won, drawn, lost their last three games. They've won, drawn, lost the three games beforehand in the league, and so their inconsistency is everywhere. I mean, if you thought that Newcastle might be able to have a settled team with a decent bench, I would back them to beat Fulham, just like I'd have backed them to beat Everton last night. But you know, you just have absolutely sort of no idea A, how games will go, but B, what resources Eddie Howe will have. I mean, that's what I said in the match piece I wrote. It's not a run-in, it's a limp-off for Newcastle, and I think it sort of takes away so much of the certainty around the team. It's very difficult to predict.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't won consecutive Premier League matches since the start of December, and that coincides with the injury crisis really starting to take hold, and that's since Martin Dubravka's come and go, and that's not just digging out Martin Dubravka, but that's sort of the period where you've seen the drop-off in terms of Newcastle defensively as a whole, and that's added to it. Newcastle are mid-table because they are inconsistent, that's the cliche, but if you look at it, that's nearly 4 months Newcastle haven't won consecutive Premier League matches, which for any side who wants to get into Europe, that is really, really, you're making it difficult for yourselves.
Martin Dubravka, though, you mentioned him, Chris, and he was a little bit more proactive against Everton, wasn't he? He did come off his line a bit quicker.
He did come off his line a couple of times, but equally, and this is not to be too harsh on him, but if you compare the two goalkeepers, who was the of last night, and for all of the stick that Jordan Pickford got, if you switch the two goalkeepers, I think that Newcastle fans, in terms of performance of a goalkeeper and the ability to save shots, I think that they would want one rather than the other, and that's harsh on Martin Dubravka. And the penalty, I've seen a lot of people say he should save it. I don't know if he should necessarily save it, but he does get his hand.
He almost dives
it.
Past it, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's always, I always think it's difficult with a penalty to say the goalkeeper should definitely save it, but it's just he's clearly not fully full of confidence at the moment. It's a defence who's not played with him before, a defence who's not played together as well, and they did well for the most part, and he was a bit more proactive, but the problem is he's just not, the missing of Nick Pope is just huge. It's just glaring miss.
A little word on Dominic Calvert-Lewin as well, Jacob. If there's a player who's going through a goal-scoring crisis, get him up to St James's Park, give him a penalty. That's the best thing to do, isn't it?
I think this is something where Everton and Newcastle agree. Both clubs have this incredible ability, some would even say destiny, to be sort of an end of all travails for any opposition which comes up. It's kind of a case, yeah, I know it well. Nothing changed when I came up to St James's Park. But I mean, to be honest, I was thinking he was going to miss it with a penalty. And then when it was not a great penalty.
He's got a good record against Newcastle, hasn't he?
He was good when he came on, wasn't he? I thought he was good.
I thought he played well, yeah.
Well, without making this an Everton podcast, he offers so much. When neither him or Beto was scoring, he offers so much more in terms of hold-up play, in terms of physicality. And I think you could see that he caused Newcastle's centre-backs, like Byrne, had a very good game and dealt with Beto very easily. And he still played well against Calvert-Lewin, but it's just much more of a challenge.
Yes, fair play. Train strikes, though, this time, making it a ridiculous journey for Newcastle fans once more. So good luck to the travelling fans getting there. I'm sure we'll be going in numbers. Jacob, you've got your finger in the air.
I have a question, speaking of snack-related things, for Chris, which is, you may have seen the Fulham fans go viral last weekend for taking a very posh cheese board on their trip up north for a match, almost taking the piss out themselves. But with Chris making the journey down to Fulham this weekend, and as the paragon of Geordie culture and our snack-related correspondent, I wanted to know what 5 items Chris would put on a board for his train journey / strike-affected journey down to Fulham.
Ham and peas pudding, saveloy dip, stotty.
15 cracked hard-boiled eggs.
15 cracked hard-boiled eggs. Week old, but that'll be fine. Yeah. And what the last one? Bottle of Newcastle Brown Ale. Yeah, let's go for that cliche.
Oh, you absolute Geordie man, you. Look at you.
Do you remember?
It's so beige.
Yeah. Do you remember the time? So Chris came with me to a Newcastle women's match at Kingston Park, and it was great. It was a lovely day, but there was a few moments of awkwardness between us because Chris broke out a pack. He brought a packed lunch to Kingston Park. He was unable to travel 3 miles without taking a packed lunch, and he brought out these beautifully wrapped ham and peas pudding sandwiches. And I said, "Oh, Chris, it was funny, you know. It was like a massive cliche, but it's like, oh, Chris, amazing." And he just stood there and ate them
the whole
himself, and didn't offer one. And he got quite aggressive when I suggested that he might want to think about sharing them around. But yeah, I mean, if he did that for Kingston Park, imagine what he would do for Fulham.
He is a man never without a ration of pocket meat, is he? He's always got pocket meat close by.
I've had a few people say this to me now, yeah, the Bob Mortimer character. It's like, this is Chris. I met him yesterday and we had breakfast. He ordered poached eggs on toast and I thought there was something wrong with him. It was like, he said, some bacon as well, please. So you got a side order of bacon, so everything was okay in the world.
Right then, chaps, let's call it a day. Jacob, thank you very much for coming back. Lovely to see you.
Thank you very much. I am off right now to the airport to Amsterdam, bound for Volendam and Feyenoord to watch Newcastle's Garen Kroll and Jakuba Minter, who play against each other on Thursday evening. And I'll also keep an eye out for a couple of pieces on both of them. I'm doing a few other bits while I'm out there, but I'm effectively Newcastle's loan correspondent now. is my new role.
Well, safe travels and report back on how the lads are doing. George, thank you very much for your time.
You're totally welcome. It's part of my contract. It's not something that I take any delight in doing, but I have no choice. So within that context, it was an absolute pleasure.
At least you're honest. Well done. Thank you, Chris. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. I shall get myself strapped up ready for Fulham in case I'm required on Saturday.
Yeah, take your boots, definitely.
You're having to go for about 3 days as well, aren't you, because of the tube strike.
I'll just turn up at the Newcastle United team hotel and just hope that I get a space on the bus.
Your old stomping ground, Chris?
My old stomping ground, yeah. Very, very, very Fulham Hammersmith, mate. That's my...
Fulham massive.
Right then, get in touch at podonthetyne on Twitter or X and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. From everybody here, thank you very much for listening. We shall speak to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.